hey, folks, I'm WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Tito Santana.
This is Kurt Angle.
This is Bret the Hitman Hart. And this is going out to Scott and Holly.
You are listening to the
Win Twice Wrestling Podcast
with Scott and Holly.
Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
And this holds for everybody. Ho!
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to listen to the incomparable Win Twice Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, Scott and Holly. We always go over, brother, and that's the bottom line. Dig it? So sit back, relax, and prepare to be entertained.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 49 of the Win Twice Wrestling Podcast. Did that get an ooh there, Holly?
Cheeky 49.
Well, cheeky 49. It's like a 69, but without a... Well, anyway, we don't need to worry about that one too much for now. But, yeah, again, I don't know why. It feels like it's been a while since we've done one of these, and it really hasn't been.
Yeah.
I think it's because we're out of sync, because we did one last week,
mm-hmm.
and then we'd kind of built up a backlog of a couple that we could release ahead of time.
Yeah.
And now, I don't know, my body clock, like, because the clocks have just gone back recently, my body clock is out of sync with this show now. Don't know whether I'm coming or going, as was the test from last night when I realised, oh shit, I've still got half a show to watch I forgot about. But yes, you're alongside your co-host Scott and Holly. And Holly, so we needed another shorter episode. I feel like it sounds like a cop-out, but we still do. I think we're providing premium content.
Oh, yeah.
So, as you would agree, I'm sure.
Standard.
But we did need to make sure that we had a shorter episode. So we're actually doing a double recording today.
Yeah.
You probably hear a bit of delirium seeping as we go into episode 50.
yeah, for sure.
But for now, what we're doing is we're actually going back to one of our originally unintended series of the first ofs. Covered a lot of things in the first ofs. One of the ones in the first ofs, that being Saturday Night Main Event, has taken on its own little mini series format, which we may or may not see at some point in the next couple of episodes. But we've also covered SmackDown, you've got Raw, you've got Nitro, Thunder, ECW TV, and there's some lesser shows, shall we say, in the annals of WWF and WWE history.
Mm.
And one of them is Sunday Night Heat.
Yes.
Holly.
Mm.
I'm assuming you were aware, at least, of Sunday Night Heat being a show.
I've heard
okay,
about it, yeah.
So had you ever?
I think I've even watched an episode or two at some point.
Okay, that was going to be my question.
Life, I guess.
So how would you have seen those episodes? Like, I realise that sounds like a stupid question because you're
on the telly
with my eyes. There it is. See,
my
I know
one
you...
and a half working eyes.
One and a half working eyes. So I knew you were going to give some sort of response like that, but.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of the circumstances in terms of like how old you would have been? What?
Oh, fuck knows.
Would it have been? It, surely not an over the back fence job.
No, I think it would have been like a repeated Sunday morning, like on Sky job.
On Sky, okay.
I think maybe,
so growing up for me, I don't know when in terms of the history of how it was shown on British TV, but for me, Sunday Night Heat was always Channel 4.
Was it?
Channel 4 on a Sunday. And I, like I'm assuming many other people, not even necessarily around the same age as us, but I think they would have used Sunday Night Heat to catch up on things they missed on Raw and SmackDown, because they often would dip into what happened in the last week and say, this has happened and this has happened.
Yeah.
And then they'd have matches between people that, let's say, weren't the main attractions.
I'm really sorry, I'm going to have to strip off.
Oh, okay, wow, fine. Absolutely.
It's so hot in
here. That's a lot of colour as well on that shirt for you, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm not in black.
I don't think I've ever seen you wear that blue either.
No.
What's that say?
Chargers today.
We need to talk.
No, come on.
Who's your team?
Chargers are my number one team, but Raiders are a very, very close second.
Chargers are your number
They've
one team?
They've always been the number one.
When did that happen?
They've always been number one.
Why
the
did
Raiders
you...
are very, very much so up no. there. The Raiders are the best colour, I'll be honest.
True. Well, for, certainly for your colour palette.
Yeah.
But
this Chargers has always been a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then why did we discuss it and you were like, oh, I'm a Raiders... Cause...
I'm a Raiders girl, but I'm also a Chargers girl.
That's...
Sorry.
Oh, I'm so saddened by this. I'm so saddened by this. More thinking, I definitely got you a Raiders hat.
Yeah. Did you?
Okay,
yeah.
Fine. Well, had I known, I'd have gone Chargers, but...
No, I'm already kitted out for Chargers.
Oh, I can see that, yeah. See that. Very colourful. Quite distracting, actually, in fact. But, yeah, so Sunday Night Heat for me was like a staple of my childhood. It was probably the show, because this was at the time as well when I moved from my previous accommodation, like I was in some sort of, I don't know, orphanage, which isn't the case, that I'm aware of. And we moved house, and as part of moving to a bigger house, one of the sacrifices was we couldn't afford you know, the luxury of Sky TV at the time. So I lost, like I said, all the SmackDown. Well, it wouldn't have even been SmackDown then when I moved. No, I tell a lie. Yeah, of course it would have been. No, sorry, Raw I lost. SmackDown wasn't even a show when I moved. Mm-hmm. So I lost that kind of touch point. So Sunday Night Heat was, for the most part, apart from the free pay-per-views, which we mentioned before, that were shown on Channel 4 for a brief period of time in the UK, that was my only touch point with the company and the magazines and stuff I was reading, because it was a different world. I mean, it sounds like we're talking 50 years ago, and we're really not. It's, what, 24 years ago? So I moved in 97, I think. So this show was in, what, August of 98. So fortunately, this came around not too long. Yeah, not too long after the fact, so I didn't have too much of a lag without anything that I could watch other than my VHSs, because DVDs weren't a thing at this time, really, either. Certainly not commonplace.
Back in the day.
So what I went into this with a couple of thoughts as to what we would see, but I was also aware it was the first of its kind, and for the first of its kind, they usually put something a little bit extra in. So in terms of how this show was put together, I thought they actually used more bigger names, shall we say. If we watch, let's say, go to a Heat show from 2000, 2001, it would look very different.
Right, okay.
You won't have any of the big names. You'll get them included in the repeats. Yeah. The repeats? The repeats. Repeat. Yeah, that was a bit Americanized, wasn't it? But you won't get those big names competing on the show.
Okay, that makes a bit of sense then.
So I was hopeful that we weren't going to see just job squad matches one after the other.
I was a little concerned after we'd put in our little group chat. I say we, I didn't. After, I think you put in a group chat of what we were watching, and Jamie came back and was like, effectively, that's going to be a crock of shit. And I was like, oh no.
I didn't comment, I don't think,
you didn't
on
come
that.
Back on it, no.
Only because he would be right if you were picking any show in the future, just because it was there to get some TV time for the lesser names.
It did give me like a bit of a,
I know you could put up with it. We've done some of the Saturday night's main events, which have been, one of them in particular will just haunt me. Mr. Fuji and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat in a kung fu match, whatever it was. Oh, sweet God. But no, we're at Sunday night's main, Sunday night's main event.
Sunday night's
I've conflated
event.
The two here. Oh, could you imagine? Oh, no, could you imagine?
Saturday and Sunday.
So you don't even get like the likes of Hulk Hogan and stuff like that. But no, it's WWF Sunday Night Heat, and this is the debut episode, which aired on the 2nd of August 1998. It was recorded on the 27th of July 1998. The venue was the Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim, California. Haven't we just been there for WrestleMania? Not in the real world, but in our podcast journey.
I think so.
Wasn't that the last
one?
I
know it was Anaheim, but I don't know.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. But the last show as well. And we've had a few in California, but I think we've just been there twice in a row. The attendance was approximately 4,400. I couldn't seem to pin down a specific number. But the TV rating, from what I read, was 6.6, which is actually quite unbelievable when you compare it again to today's TV ratings for Raw and AEW. Granted, again,
small now.
Yeah, they are, but again, it's a different animal, isn't it? The landscape of how people consume wrestling. It's it's TV numbers aren't the be all and end all that they used to be, because now I think the ratings for Raw are like 2 something. Raw, and this is 6.6, so it just shows a different lay of the land. So I've got an article right off the bat.
Who's it from?
Not what you think.
Stop it. Not the Sportster.
Not from the Sportster.
Oh
no,
God.
It's from Bleacher Report.
You're a traitor.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I will take whatever information comes from the sources that I need. That's whether it happens to be the same place over and over again, I cannot help with, because I genuinely have no affiliation with that place. It just happens that they produce a lot of the stuff that is useful. So in August 1998, WWE was riding a wave of momentum. Stone Cold Steve Austin was wrestling's number one rebel, and his rivalry with the evil Mr. McMahon had captivated audiences and driven WWE to the forefront of the Monday Night War after an 83-week ass-kicking by WCW. Excuse me. With wildly entertaining characters such as The Undertaker, The Rock, D-Generation X, and Sable, The company had struck a chord with the audience. The outrageous, chaotic TV storytelling of Vince Russo and the writing team was engrossing and made the company's television product a must-see. The rating success of Raw and the pop culture phenomenon that Austin had become understandably led USA to want more WWE programming on its network. Enter Sunday Night Heat. Heat invaded the living rooms of eager fans August 2nd, 1998, and served as another opportunity for WWE to deliver its stories and superstars. Those early days featured appearances from Rock, Austin, Undertaker, and even McMahon himself. Sometimes those superstars battled in high-profile main events, and other times they were utilised to further storylines that would make fans tune in to Raw. Most of all, early episodes of Heat were broadcast live, preserving the air of unpredictability that had become such a significant part of the WWE product. Obviously, this one isn't, because I just told you it was pre-recorded. While the live presentation would be short-lived, it was integral to getting the audience's attention at the time. Utilising the programme as a live springboard for stories that would later play out on that week's episode of Raw was a smart booking decision that elevated the importance of the show and created even more excitement for Monday nights. Heat was also a tremendous asset to WWE on pay-per-view Sundays in that it provided the company with one last push for that night's extravaganza. I love them getting those kind of words into these articles because it's just so Vince McMahon-y.
Extravaganza.
Oh, it's great. Major angles would play out moments before the pay-per-view went on the air, forcing fans who may have been on the fence about ordering the event to finally take the leap and pledge their $40.
$40 quid?
Yeah.
Gosh.
I mean, yeah, that was just how, that was their big revenue maker, apart from like, obviously merchandise, house shows, but yeah, pay-per-view.
40 notes.
Yeah, exactly. You can go see progress for that. Just weeks after its introduction, Heat was home to a red-hot episode 1 hour before WWE took to the highway to hell at SummerSlam 1998. On that show, Austin attacked a hearse with a sledgehammer, believing either Kane or Undertaker to be inside just hours before a WWE Championship defence against the Deadman in the night's main event. Degeneration X brawled with the Nation, and Sable revealed that her mystery partner for that night's show would not be one of the oddities, but rather someone fans least expected. The show was the ultimate tease for SummerSlam, and WWE would replicate that formula over time, using Heat as the last advertisement for its pay-per-view endeavours. By the time the one-year anniversary of Heat rolled round, the WWE product was at its hottest and most in demand. SmackDown's arrival in April 99, so bearing in mind Heat came around before SmackDown did, took the emphasis off Heat, leaving it to become a shell of what it once was.
That's interesting. Sorry, I know you're...
No, go for
it. But that's interesting. Weirdly for me, my brain doesn't understand how... this comes before that.
Yeah, and basically what they're saying here is SmackDown's arrival killed off Heat to being a kind of a third-tier show that it eventually became. Not saying that it didn't serve its purpose, but it wasn't exactly...
It wasn't needed, I guess, was it?
Only for TV time for people that otherwise couldn't get that on Raw and SmackDown. Gone were the icons of the Attitude Era, whose presence was needed elsewhere, and in their place were the mid-card competitors who otherwise may have struggled to get any television time. The result was a show that may have lacked stars but carried plenty of opportunity for the superstars who appeared on it. Guys such as D'Lo Brown, Val Venus, Droz, Prince Albert, Test, Gangrel and Mark Henry all benefited from receiving ring and screen time they otherwise would have been robbed of on Monday and Thursday nights.
I'm livid. Livid that Test is being called mid-card.
He was mid-card.
I know.
There's no, I'm not having a main event, I'm afraid. There was little in the way of storyline development. Instead, the superstars were given the platform to showcase their in-ring skills and consequently earn a following from fans who appreciated their ability. We're nearly there. As Heat evolved, it became the C-level show that gave talent unable to get on the company's two premiere broadcasts some exposure. By the time 2002 rolled round and the brand extension was in full effect, superstars such as the aforementioned Brown, Stevie Richards, Raven, Thin Balls Mahoney, and Rodney Mack became staples of the show.
Such a dick.
The writers in charge of the afterthought, that's so harsh but not wrong, took bold risk, attempting to tell those characters' stories to varying degrees of success. Management did not care, and as a result, Heat became this little haven of sorts for cult favourites to ply their craft without the interference of McMahon and co. In 2005, there was even appearance from a future WWE champion, CM Punk.
Really?
Yep. All the way through until its final episode in 2008, Heat was the place for the underutilised, underrated and undervalued to work, to make a living and grow fan bases of diehard wrestling fans.
Oh, okay.
So a bit of background there. I like to, when we do these kind of first ofs, I like to give you a little bit of how the genesis of that show and how it came to be. So I feel like that did a pretty good job. So thank you to the Bleacher Report for that article there. Does that kind of set the table a little bit for you and kind of make some of the sense of what we saw in the show? Because obviously you go in this as a blank slate, as it were. Probably come out relatively blank slate still, but having seen some stuff you may or may not have liked. But yeah, hopefully that kind of shed a little bit of light on it for you. So I guess my question to you, obviously this is in hindsight because you've seen the show, and I know you try and say you keep your expectations low, but did you have something in your head as to what it would look like, what it would feel, who it would feature?
I thought it would just be a very small, like, I don't know, I suppose from watching the first Raw, SmackDown, all that sort of stuff, I was like, I wonder how it's going to compare. But also knowing that it's a much smaller, like in my head, I was like, I'm not going to get any, there's going to be no one in here that I'm going to potentially really enjoy watching. That's how I started.
Okay. I think it's fair to say that that wasn't the case.
No, it was not.
As the show unfolded.
Absolutely.
So let's dive into that right now. As is customary with a show of this era, we see the classic WWF intro before we transition into the new Heat video package featuring the likes of The Undertaker, Triple H and Stone Cold to name but a few. In keeping with the Attitude Era, the presentation is full of quick cuts from one scene to another, no doubt to accentuate the fast-paced, exciting nature of the product. The clip finishes with the show title on the middle of the screen in blazing font before we go to the arena, where we see an incredibly loud and colourful pyro display in the ring. It felt kind of big time. Surprisingly big time, which is not how I remember Sunday Night Heat at all. With the music still playing, and before we are welcome to commentary, Vince McMahon appears with microphone in hand atop the ramp to introduce us to the host and star of Sunday Night Heat. And Holly, who is the star of Sunday Night Heat?
That would be Shane.
Shane McMahon, why do I have a sinking feeling in my gut?
Instantly, that is what I thought. Instantly, I was like, oh God, really? 45 minutes of this.
But this is before the Here Comes the Money. Shane sounds like he's walking out to a version of Jacqueline's music, which can't help but make me smile as he's bouncing his head along in an oversized blue shirt before hugging his father. Pretty sure that was Jackie's music. It sounded exactly like it to me. We now hear the voice of JR saying that he and Jerry Lawler are stunned as they understood that they'd be leading this broadcast. Shane momentarily heads back behind the curtain, but only to retrieve a couple of ladies, one for each arm, as he now makes his way down the aisle.
Why?
Why not? Is my counterpoint to that. Why not? Hey? But his wife was thrilled.
Oh, God.
Don't worry, guys. We learn their names later on in the show.
Oh, we do.
Yes. I've got them. Don't worry. A few fans in the front row were very happy to see Shane, as one screams at him that he loves him, and Shane high-fives a couple of other Chads in the front row. So that was surprising to me.
I was distracted by a sign that was in the crowd.
Oh, please.
And it was a drawn pair of tits.
Excellent.
And it literally had the picture equals ratings.
Could have been wise. Eyes wide open.
They weren't eyes.
How do you know?
Come on.
Well, if you draw me a pair of like cartoon eyes, it's going to look like breasts. That's all I'm saying.
No, it was like the. It was like, imagine like a W.
Oh, so how you draw them, kind
and then,
of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Yeah. What was the nipple to boob ratio?
That's a decent drawing.
Okay. Fair enough. Good for them.
Well drawn.
Excellent. Obviously, did some art GCSE.
Of course.
Definitely a guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, don't worry, we get on the topic of boobs and that related kind of stuff later on.
Okay.
Hey, I can only play the notes in front of me, Holly.
I am well aware.
Yep. As Shane and the ladies make it to the announce desk, it becomes very awkward very quickly. As one of the girls sits next to JR, who stands up. Shane begins talking and JR says he can't hear a single word he's saying until he puts the headset on. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I did.
Shane says, welcome to Sunday Night Heat, and takes his seat at commentary before we move into the opening match of the night.
And it's at this point my brain goes, oh, so we don't get King anymore.
That was the one blessing.
Okay, yeah, but who would you rather have?
King.
Yeah. I mean, I'll mention it when it happens, but there are some things that Shane does on commentary that I actually think, that's actually quite nice.
Okay.
But I was like, no.
Was crotch chopping one of them?
No, that was definitely not.
But, Holly.
Yes.
Opening match of the night. Uh-huh. We get Edge versus Jeff Jarrett with Tennessee Lee.
God.
Making his way through the crowd is a treat for Holly. Edge. Pleasingly to me, he isn't wearing sunglasses indoors, but he is still some way off having an identifiable personality.
Do you know what upset me here? This
dry hair.
This, I mean, yes, but this really set off my OCD.
Why?
His name on the screen
was
all in capitals, apart from the E at the end.
Did you not see that they were doing this for everyone, though?
It's so annoying.
Really?
Why?
Oh, I hate that.
It really sets off my brain into those.
But you must have lost your shit then, because they were doing that for everyone. Because at first I saw that and went, that's poor.
It's an error, but no.
And then I realised, I think it was during Shane McMahon's, I noticed that they'd done that and thought, oh, that's a whoopsie. And then I saw it on Edge and went, oh, okay, I forgot this was a thing.
But at what point does someone go, oh, it's a really good idea.
That's cool. It's edgy.
Let's put it all in capitals apart from the last little bit.
The initial choice was Comic Sans, I'll have you know. So bubble writing was up there as well.
Absolutely fun.
As
long as it's all in the same bloody uppercase.
With transitions.
Across the screen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or the shutters.
Absolutely. Yeah. Coming up. Mm. Brilliant. His opponent being led to the ring by Tennessee Lee is Jeff Jarrett. And I still think he's in his country music phase after returning to WCW that didn't last long before he went to his slap nuts phase. And
he's wearing the same outfit that we saw him in last time. The silver top with the bits just covering the nips when we saw him.
He had it wasn't cut the same way at all, I didn't think. I thought it was a full-on vest.
Exactly the same.
No. That one was way more... it's the one that you said that you had.
Well, a take on it, yes.
But yeah. Is it silver
exactly
as well?
The same. No, God, okay. No.
Black.
Me, silver.
Black.
Yeah, of course it is.
Of course it's black. Yeah, sorry, I realised.
Was long past. Those days are long past gone.
So you're not going to wear that for the next recording is what I'm hearing. That's a shame.
No.
Hey, I'd wear it too. It's fine. Holly, talk to me about Tennessee Lee, will you please? He sounds to me exactly like the guy from Police Academy. It's pretty much the gist of whatever he articulates. Jeff, you gotta win the match!
I just couldn't do without it.
That is Tennessee Lee.
Yeah.
He famously, actually, in WCW, I can't remember, was it Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker or something like that? I can't remember his character's name, but he was involved in a match. And I think it was a War Games match, and he got hit with a move, shit himself.
Like, actually?
Actually shit himself, and he's wearing white.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's bad.
And I think there's a bit where you can see the shit in the ring, and was it Arn Anderson was in there with him? Saw it, and trod on it so the camera didn't pick up on it.
Oh.
Yeah. Buddy Lee Parker, eh?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I think that was his name, but
God.
It's definitely Sergeant something or other, but yeah, shat himself. Anyway, he didn't shit himself here, thankfully. Double J gets a... What?
Oh, what does he say?
Okay, no, it's typoed this. So Double J gets a wet fart of a pyro display in the ring, spelling out Double J, but in fairness, it does improve as the things actually do start to spin like they're supposed to. On commentary, Shane introduces us to Ali and Kyla. I'm going to say, okay. I think is what they said. I don't know how I've tried to spell it here. There's a G I've put in it for some reason.
Ooh, a silent G.
Well, yeah. So, although she wouldn't know, she's too dumb. So for those that give a shit, you have that information now. JR asks if they're 21, and Ali pauses and says, I am. JR then turns away and says, yeah, well, I'd like to see some ID. King, meanwhile, is fine not knowing. In the ring, Jarrett starts throwing right hands at Edge in the corner, who has yet to remove his jacket. Holly's upset.
Yeah.
In an effort to help him, Jeff pulls the long jacket over Edge's face and drags him to the canvas before it's eventually removed. More right hands in the corner is followed by a whip, kick to the gut, and another big right hand. Whip reversal sees Jarrett land face first on the canvas, courtesy of a what is this move called, Holly?
Flapjack.
Flapjack!
Yes!
Spear from Edge lands, and now he is slamming Double J's head off the canvas multiple times. Shane is already massively on my tits as he continues to call Lola Kingfish, and he asks the girls if they're ready to party. If either of them could spell party, I'd set some streamers off myself. Edge, meanwhile, is standing on the apron, but has his attention distracted, allowing Jarrett to knock him down to the floor. Baseball slide dropkick from Jarrett sends Edge face first into the guardrail, and he's kneeling on what appears to be a sea of crowd signs.
Yeah.
What do you think of the aesthetic of it being like an actual guardrail like ECW?
Yeah, it's different, isn't it?
Bit edgy, bit grungy?
Yeah.
Okay, I was fine with it, to be fair.
Yeah.
Back in the ring, Edge reverses a whip but is countered and planted with the stroke, which JR on commentary is quick to call out as a new move by the musician. Like the skull-crushing finale, basically. Jarrett climbs to the top rope and connects. Well, it's not really. It's like a front Russian, side Russian leg sweep.
Yeah, whereas Miz is kind of leg sweep.
Yeah, that's fine. And that's more accurate, to be fair. Jarrett climbs to the top rope and connects with a crossbody, but Edge rolls through and hooks the leg for a near fall. On their feet, and Edge misses wildly, opening up to a kick to the stomach and a DDT. The cameras take us back to commentary, where Shane points out that Ali was a playmate of the year for lingerie or something to that effect, and JR asks, "So you were naked?" She responds saying yes, and asks if he wants to see the magazine, which Shane passes to King, who literally goes, "Woohoo!" How that make you feel? Yeah, but if it, playmate for lingerie,
I thought it was Playboy.
That's what I thought, but I swear
that's what
I heard
the magazine was.
Yeah, but I swear I heard them say lingerie
mate
in there.
Of the year, I don't know. But who knows? I wasn't really listening.
But naked?
To them.
No. Let's discuss. But I don't understand how you could lingerie and naked are two very different. That you either are or you aren't. It's like you can't be a little bit pregnant. Like you're either in it or you're not in it. But they were, it felt like they were talking about cross purposes. But I thought JR's interaction with the women sensational. Right. I really enjoyed it. Just that, are you 21? Yeah, cool. I'd like to see some ID. Just like ignoring them, dismiss it. It was really funny. Really funny, I thought. Double J with a blatant choke on Edge, but he has lost some focus and the Canadian begins to fire back. Makeup is being applied to Shane and the ladies on commentary in the latest update on that front. A dill hole in the crowd asks for some too, but is rightly ignored.
Oh, God, the guy behind them. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Annoying.
Yeah. More kicks from Double J put Edge on the canvas. His suplex attempt is countered, however, and Edge hits one of his own. Holds on and hits a second before a front suplex finishes it off for a near fall. I thought we were going to get the Three Amigos then.
Yeah.
Atomic drop by Edge and a clothesline sends Double J over the top to the floor. Tennessee checks on Jarrett, and it appears as though he has given some signal that results in him distracting the official, which kind of didn't look right, but there you go. I think it's all building up to what we see in a moment. Edge suplexes Jeff back into the ring, and I'm not sure what that signal meant at all. On their feet, Double J pokes the eye before... Sorry, do you want boo there, or...?
Okay. Honestly, if I spent the whole time booing what I see in these next two episodes, we'd never get any talking done.
That is fair. Double J pokes the eye before signalling again to Tennessee what he wants... that he wants Edge to be tripped. Jarrett finds his whip reversed, and Lee grabs Double J's legs instead, causing him to faceplant into the canvas. Hook of the leg by Edge, and we get the 1, 2, 3. Edge remains undefeated in the WWF.
Yeah.
After raising his arm in victory, Edge takes his leave and exits through the crowd. And all is not well in the world of country music, as after exchanging a few words, Double J shoves Tennessee in the chest and storms off. A replay shows exactly what caused the ending of the opener. Holly, what did you think?
I didn't mind it, actually. And again, I obviously have to go into these things as being like blank canvas... And not comparing them to, say, a match at Mania or something.
Yeah, of course.
Like,
fair.
For me, actually, this was a good opener. I thought I'm always happy with a bit of Edge, so quite happy. I made some notes about this. Is actually when Shane on commentary, this is where I've written it down.
Okay.
He, whether it's intentional or not, he would call something or say a move and then say to JR, "Can I just check, is that right? Is that what that's called?" And I just quite liked that little like... I don't know, whether it's intentional or not, I just quite liked the, he's the expert, let me just check the what I've said is right.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to replace, what a manoeuvre!
Oh, God.
Could you imagine if he was doing that?
I would have watched it on mute, I think.
I see. What did you score it?
2.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
1.5.
Yeah.
I thought it was slow-paced. I don't know, there's something about Jeff Jarrett matches that rarely click for me.
Yeah.
And Edge wasn't nearly interesting enough to engage me in the same way that he was you, I assume.
I don't know what you're implying.
Like I said, it wasn't bad. The ending was a bit of a wet fart because people get tripped all the time. Granted, you could tell Jarrett tried to plant himself more like it had impact, so there's that. And again, for the type of show it was, I guess it's fine, but I couldn't really go above 1.5.
That's why for me I gave it 2.5 because I was like, it's right middle of the road.
Okay.
Like, didn't hate it, didn't love it. just happy to see Edge first.
Yep, now I'm going to be honest with you. The next bit that we go into after this match has got one of the genuine best performers of the night in it for me. Okay?
Oh.
Seriously, I'll explain as we get there. We see them a couple of times. This isn't the moment where they really shine. But I actually thought they genuinely did very well.
I think I know who you're talking
genuinely
about.
Genuinely did very well, yeah. Like not even ironically.
Yeah.
The camera show us a couple of the actors in Pacific Blue as we see Mario Lopez, or Lopex as it's got here, and Amy Hunter Cornelius, weird name, smiling and waving from the front row. From here, we're taken backstage where we can see X-Pac and China are being spoken to by a very dry and frizzy-haired Triple H.
So sad. So sad.
Oh, it gets sadder. Oh, it gets sadder for your boy. For the King of Schnoz.
Oh.
The King of Schnoz style. Triple H, sure, make it happen. We cannot hear what they're saying, but it looks as though the future Cerebral Assassin is trying to start a game of rock, paper, scissors as he pounds his clenched fist on the palm of his upturned hand repeatedly. China and X-Pac just nod. We head to a commercial break.
Mm.
The whole time he's talking, he's doing that.
Oh, what? Like,
he's getting ready to go. Yeah, exactly.
Open palm.
I tried to articulate it well there, but I felt like...
Yeah.
It might have been overlooked by you that he was literally signalling a game of rock, paper, scissors. After a return from the break, we see D-Generation X make their way to the ring with the usual cutaway to the entrance video and the live action of the trio walking to the ring.
That hurts my brain so much.
I always thought it was fine. Never had an issue with it, if I'm honest.
I don't have an issue with it. It just, my little brain really struggles when it moves that quick.
It is very apparent that China has started her transition, as although she still looks like the old China, she does possess a couple of very noticeable additions.
Two.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you go into more details if you see fit. Crotch chops and fireworks go off, and I have to say both X-Pac and Triple H look wildly underwhelming with these get-ups.
Yeah, not the one.
King stands in the middle of the ring and says he wants to conduct an interview, but he knows Triple H has something he wants to say. What is it that he wants to say? Are you ready?
Also, the fuck is he wearing on his face?
Oh, the glasses.
Oh, ick.
It's like he's Morpheus or something.
It's so bad.
In The Matrix. I don't know what he's doing.
So bad.
As Triple H asks this, he looks like he doesn't quite have his balance on the middle rope, so holds himself there awkwardly as the crowd respond. Do you see that? He kind of went up there and I felt like his grip wasn't quite right. He was like, I need to call this out, so I'm just going to stay here like I intended to do that. I don't think you did, big boy. Triple H says that for the thousands in attendance. And one old wrestler stood in the ring in a Liberace outfit.
Liberace?
Mm-hmm. JR and Shane laugh at comms, and even King is standing there smiling at the dig. Let's get ready to suck it! I really never understood what was expected from this request.
No.
Why do you want everyone going around? I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not a treat for the other party, but I would be very selective about who's going to give it a little kiss. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? I don't want, like, going up to go, oh, yeah, JR. So, no, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, he wouldn't do it unless there was barbecue sauce on it. Let's be perfectly honest, but... Triple H says that for the... Oh, no, we've done that. King asks X-Pac about his thoughts on Vince McMahon making Triple H and X-Pac go one-on-one next Monday night to decide the number one contender for the Intercontinental title. Will this be the final nail in the DX coffin? X-Puck says that he and Triple H are pros. I love the fact you yawn as soon as I get to the bit about
so
X-Puck talking.
He's so unintentional.
I know.
He still just winds me up. He doesn't even fucking do anything.
Oh, don't worry, he gets his bullets in a second. X-Puck says that he and Triple H are pros, although he does refer to himself as X to the P to the A to the C, which will have angered Holly as much as me.
Honestly.
X-Puck says they will tear it up and then shake hands after. Furthermore, are they talking about China? What are they...
Stop.
Vince McMahon can suck it. His promos are not good. And I realise one of the biggest issues for me, not only are the words like a little panicked, the eyes tell the story. It's the deer in the headlights. Yeah. You can see, like, no matter what he's saying, his eyes are white.
Petrified.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I just can't engage with that. In, like, every interview I've ever seen, the best interview he probably ever did, and it was dog shit, was the one where he was wearing, like, the, not kimono, but, you know, the thing where he accompanied Razor Ramon. I was like, yeah, Razor's ready. Razor, because he didn't have that wide-eyed stare. But every other interview, it's like, I don't quite know what I'm saying here. And it feels like he doesn't believe what he's saying, so why should I?
I wonder if that's why he wears such a large bandana to try and cover his eyes, so everyone doesn't see how petrified he is.
And I feel like, we've been a bit harsh on him, because, like, in terms of what he does in the ring, It's fine. Yeah. Probably better than a lot, actually, yeah. to be honest. But
I'd agree with that.
A big portion of the whole professional wrestling shtick is being able to, in equal parts, I'm just trying to think of someone who, I mean, I guess it depends on the era in which you're looking at. But if you go through the history, like The Rock, was he the best wrestler? No, but he could carry himself to a level where it was fine. Mm. But obviously he more than made up for it on the stick. Stone Cold Steve Austin on the stick was great. Back in the day, was actually a very good wrestler. But in his prime in the WWF, after he'd had to taper it down because of injuries, etc., his matches weren't great. The best one he ever had for me in the WWF by a mile was with Bret Hart. And that was before he came the animal that he would in about a year or so's time. So you've got to have the balance. And X-Pac was... do I want to say he was better in the ring than The Rock? No, I don't. Because what he did athletically is better, but because he doesn't have the natural charisma with it, it doesn't hit the same. So I'm aware that athletically he's doing better stuff, but it's not. It doesn't work.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of my issue with X-Pac. Because it's funny, because obviously we were talking about X-Pac heat and you not being a fan specifically, which ties into that.
Yeah.
And I never really felt strongly one way or the other about him. I kind of nothinged him.
Yeah.
But going into these podcasts to try and analyse what we're seeing, I'm able to identify, like, oh, this, that, and the other. And like, for example, another learning experience, I guess, for me, was when we were talking about The Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
And I said, I know why I was not attracted to him, but why he engaged me as a kid. Because he's basically a big kid running around, bright colours and stuff. Yeah. Whereas X-Pac, I'm able to go, I don't like you because A, B, C, D.
I just have no interest in anything that comes out of his mouth.
Or goes into it, whatsoever. For that matter.
Well, yeah, I know.
But, I agree. And like I said, it's...
hook me in.
I mean, to be fair, is he ever going to hear this? No. But it's not actually... It sounds like a harsh dig, but it's just... That's just how it feels.
I watch him wrestle, and as we have, and I do think he is decent.
Yeah,
was decent. But
and I really enjoyed that Bret match at Raw, which you didn't as much as me, but I thought that was actually very good.
But I just don't give him a microphone.
No, I agree. You have to, for him, I think you need to adjust the way in which his character's done. So if I was booking, let's say, take me back then, it's difficult as a face because I can't quite work out how it does. I guess you'd have to do it as like an underdog who will try and fight anyone but ultimately get crushed. But as a bad guy, you've got to be a weasel. Because in the land of the giants, where everyone around him is massive, you've got to be a bit of an underhanded weasel, dirty, try and get fast ones left, right and centre. And I guess he did it to a point, but not consistently. He was always, oh, it's cool, I'm cool.
Right.
No.
Okay.
So that's it for me. So that's the talking about X-Pac. Yeah. I think we're kind of in accordance on that.
Yes.
Okay, Triple H is wearing dumbass sunglasses indoors and begins reminiscing about how he, China, and the Heartbreak Kid formed DX. And there's a noticeable pop when Shawn is referenced.
Mm.
Biggest of the night, I'd say.
Yeah, for someone who's not even there.
Yep, they kicked the arses they wanted, they showed their arses when they wanted, and they were the most titillating portion of any show they were on.
I love that word.
Emphasis on the use of the word titillating.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Holly, where do we go from there? You're the designated female in the room because I don't know what...
Designated, thanks.
Well, I'm...
I am the female in the room, right?
I am the female in the room. Okay, yes, you are the female in the room.
Yeah.
Just talk me through this bit. I'll give you my thoughts on it.
This is so bizarre. So bizarre. And I was like... You know when you sit and you watch it and you go, hang on, is this actually happening? Is this actually happening? Obviously, these girls are planted in the crowd.
First one is. I don't think the others are.
Because just coincidentally that a couple of them have fake tits, obviously.
I have a similar comment.
But, like, I'm just so confused by it. So confused.
So explain what it is that's confusing you. So what happened in the segment?
They're just, pointing in the crowd at girls to get their waps out.
Their waps, yeah.
And they oblige. Doesn't take a lot of convincing.
Well, funny you should say that. So, Triple H just starts looking around the crowd, as you said, pointing out women. And the first one's definitely a plant, as you said. An implant, if you will. He points right at her.
Yep.
And to be fair, the way she goes, shakes her head, I'm like, oh, she's really not going to do this.
Yeah.
To go, but there was like, she went from 0 to 100.
She went from 0 to, oh, let me just pop open my shirt and reveal the fact that I'm wearing nothing underneath.
Yeah, well, and obviously, though, because at first I was like, oh, she... Not, and then obviously gravity-defying surgery will do that for you. And what then amuses me here is that when one does it, like, let's... I don't want to sound harsh, because, you know, fair enough, you're proud of your body, do what you want. Well, maybe don't do that, actually, to be fair. But they go to, shall we say, less attractive women in the crowd who are just going, fucking, this is my cue. Yeah. Me, Tina and Turner. And then they're whipping them both out from the crowd, like, and just, like, multiple people are getting involved. I didn't realise how common this was, because the one I remember, Triple H wasn't on the microphone, but he's pointing to a girl quite far back in the crowd, and he's going... Like that.
That one I remember, where he mimics the lifting of the shirt. That I remember. This not
didn't. And she does, and he goes, no, all the way. And then she does that, which makes me think that she wasn't applying. I mean, it could be wrong. Right, maybe she was.
I don't know.
Because she looks similar to the one in the front row, shall we say.
If Triple H said to you, Flash, would you?
No.
No.
Would you?
No.
Well, why did you sound surprised? I'll be honest. I don't think, I'm trying to think, would there anyone that I'd go, yeah, all right.
No.
Yeah, from either gender, I feel like that's not how this works.
So if Alexa Bliss said, go on, show us what we're working with, you'd go, no.
Yeah, because I'm married.
Oh, ain't that sweet? She's not listening to this. I wish everyone could just see what you did.
What? No, I wouldn't. I definitely wouldn't. Okay. Wait, what am I getting out of this?
I don't know.
Question. Right, let's cover this scenario. So I've been asked by Alexa Bliss to see what I'm, what I'm working with. Is she just, like, is it where? A corridor? What's happening?
No, like, same situation. She's in the ring.
She's in the ring.
She's
and
done
I'm
a bit of loitering.
Oh, so this is going on TV? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The lens wouldn't be able to zoom that well. That's all I'm saying. Well, I thought it was like a one-on-one situation.
Oh, no.
And I was like, okay, maybe in a one-on-one, there's probably circumstances at some point I would, but on TV. Unless I was at a third leg, absolutely not. And even then, I wouldn't be allowed back in the arena. I'd be willing to bet that. Could you imagine, actually, if that's a point? I mean, granted, it's working towards, you know, the male demographic of 18 to 34.
Yes.
Imagine if Sable's just out there, right, let's release the hogs from the pen kind of thing. See, ready for the grind?
Oh,
like, what are we doing? And there's just guys like... smacking on the chair or something.
For sure. Dimwits that would, though, in that crowd.
Absolutely, and they'll probably all be your type.
Wow.
Am I wrong?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Okay, your former type.
Thank you.
There we go. My apologies. I tell you what, that got a lot more airtime than I was expecting that conversation. Sometimes I just need to throw you the ball and see what you do with it, because it's very entertaining for me. They spot a woman in the front row and ask her to flash. She shakes her head until she eventually goes, I'll go on then. And whops the cannons out, is how I put it. Now it's a free-for-all as another woman somewhere else flashes and Triple H is lifting his own top in the ring in excitement.
Yeah.
Triple H and X-Pac point at Shane on commentary, and then both sides crotch-chop at each other.
Mm.
No.
Mm.
No, don't want that.
Weird.
Yep. Although if JR did it, fine. Best crotch chop we've ever seen, by the way, in this. Paul Bearer. That would never not be funny. It's just the way he started going, like a demented blob.
Yeah,
JR now tells us that Kane and Mankind is scheduled to take on the nation's representatives of The Rock and Owen Hart with tag team title implications. You're probably annoyed because this is the only match they confirm. Oh, no. There's one they say is coming up, but it literally comes out right after.
Yeah.
Were you annoyed at that?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Were you intrigued at least about the match?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. We now see Stone Cold sat against a wall in a locker room, downing a cold one, or as Shane calls it, a couple of stabilisers, which I really like. That was the best moment for him on commentary, I thought.
He was drinking Coors Light.
He was.
Yeah, impressed.
Right into another commercial break. Holly.
Yeah.
When we return, we see what looks like footage of Droz focusing on his tattoos and wild pet animals before he vomits into a bin.
I do not need this in my life.
What a gimmick.
No, but at what point is this beneficial? At what point of being a wrestler is vomiting on command useful?
And a former Denver Bronco. Oh, yeah. Droz's world, ladies and gentlemen. Apparently, during training, Mark Henry blew his nose in Droz's shirt, and he thought, I don't have to take it like that. so he pukes on Mark's hand. Why the fuck did anyone think people wanted to see any of this? Is this like a... I don't know when Jackass came around, but it must have been late 90s, early noughties.
Hmm.
But this is the gross male culture, but... I don't know. I used to like funny things in Jackass, but the gross stuff I never liked.
I'd still happily sit and watch old Jackass stuff.
Yeah, but...
But anything that involved vom...
Yeah.
Or shit, or yeah, anything like that...
I agree.
Not for me.
Or like when Steve-O was paper-cutting between his... Yeah. That's, to me, that's not... But show the big hand...
Show me the big hand. Show me stunts that go wrong, fine. But I don't want to see... I can't remember who it was. Honestly, it's like Aaron McGee, whatever his name is.
God, niche.
I don't know if it's him, would make an, like, would eat all the raw ingredients of, like, an omelette.
And then be sick.
And then puke, and then cook it, and then eat it. And I'd be like, yeah, it's grim. But that stuff could do without. So this, no thank you.
Yeah, so Droz could have potentially made his way onto the list had we not just seen any of this.
Yeah.
Okay, we finish off with Droz showing a tattoo of a dog he has on his arse, and mercifully, we head to our second match. And you say that you have shit tattoos. What are we saying here? What are we saying here to Droz?
I've got one bad one, but that is horrendous.
And just to be clear, that's not me saying Holly has shit tattoos, but Holly has said that.
Yeah, one.
Is that something around here somewhere? Yeah. Okay, cool. Don't know what it is. Oh, is it a big one? What is it?
Well, it's just symbols all down my side.
Symbols of...
And not musical symbols.
Yeah, that's where my brain
went. Didn't really elaborate there, did I? Like oriental, like...
Oh, okay. What's it say?
Oh, it's top secret. No, nothing exciting.
Oh. Chicken chow mein.
That's the joke I was waiting for.
Okay.
That
is the, well, without knowing what it for. Is, but yeah. Okay. Nah, well, exciting. Maybe you'll tell me off air. Into match number two.
Yeah.
I don't know how I felt about this match, I'll be honest, but it does give me a wonderful opportunity to talk about something else that I briefly touched upon in the past in a recording with you.
Okay.
So the match,
yeah.
The Headbangers and Droz versus Kai and Tai with Mr. Yamaguchi.
Okay. Right, okay.
I'm just going to play this by ear. So we see the Headbangers and Droz make their way to the ring. And as their opponents Kai and Tai head down the aisle, we are shown footage from Monday Night Raw. Before we get into that, Holly, talk me through the Headbangers.
Oh, what do you... What...
Their wardrobe, the gimmick.
I mean, I'll be honest, I've seen them so much now that I feel a bit numb to it. Like,
really?
Does it shock me anymore?
Washes over you, does it?
Are they... They're not.
No, because this was weird.
It's not even a big thing for me.
Because I don't remember them coming out with the tit cones in this, or did they?
I don't remember. Because I've not mentioned it, therefore it can't be.
So it must have been WrestleMania 2000 where they're doing the Battle Royal, and then because one of them had the Thrasher had the silver face paint as well.
Yeah,
I feel like
this is just the skirts and vest tops that say like real men wear skirts.
Yeah, to be honest, I remember thinking at the time. To me, I thought they were dangerous. I don't know why, because I don't know how this is going to make me sound, but I guess from a young age, I'd not come across anything like that in my life, and my brain didn't know how to process it and thought they're different because, like, you know, growing up, let's be fair, growing up, like, boys don't wear skirts, that kind of stuff. So me seeing, unless you're Scottish, actually, for some reason, that seems to be the free for all, though they would say kilt, so I'm not going to argue with that. So seeing these guys like that with shaved heads, piercings. They look menacing.
You feel
like there'd be something out of like a Clockwork Orange, and they just come around like kick people's heads in and then move on. So, and also the music as well, because to me, being that young, I wasn't of the age to kind of, I wasn't into that music yet. That was about another 5 years away from me. I'd say early teens is when I started to like that kind of stuff. So I always thought they were quite, they interested me.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to say it, which is probably quite a compliment given that all the wacky characters and stuff in the history of wrestling, and I will always go, yeah, there was something about them that engaged me. Droz, I thought, was interesting as well, because I thought he carried himself well, and he had such a unique look.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can have a unique... This sounds bad. Because he was good-looking, but used the unique look aspect well, in a similar way, not to the same effect, and you're probably going to take offence to this, as Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy's a good-looking guy, but he did enough unique stuff with his hair, facial hair, colouring, all this kind of stuff, and gear, that it kind of had a similar effect to me, because Droz would always have,
doesn't
like...
just rely on the fact that they're good-looking.
Exactly, so Droz would also have the... I'm trying to think of a good description, like a Midwestern... or like a country boy type thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Where he's got, because he's got the kind of, it looks like he's been working on like a motor or something to fix it. He's got the flannel, is what I'm thinking of, that kind of design. And I know that's kind of up your street. Yeah. So
I do like a bit of flannel.
So that's why when I saw Droz, apart from, had it not been all the puking stuff like that,
yeah.
I think you'd slowly go, he's all right. There's something about him. I don't know what it is. But you can't be going around being sick in bins for fun.
No.
Okay. As we know, Holly, Val Venus has a penchant, if you will, for the ladies. And Mr. Yamaguchi's wife is no different. The two shared a shower. Mr. Yamaguchi found out and cut Italian meat at the entryway with a katana, although they didn't call it a katana, to be fair, to signal Val's upcoming coxecution. And I quote, Holly, "I choppy choppy your pee-pee." Talk me through that.
What do you want me to talk about? It's weird.
How does it, like, because my reaction is, that doesn't fly anymore. That is funny, though.
Just,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It, I wouldn't see now. Imagine Shinsuke Nakamura came out and just said, AJ Styles, I choppy your pee-pee. What doesn't work?
I'll be honest, I didn't need to hear anything. I just needed to see the massive, like, sword or whatever used to chop some, like, form of chorizo or something.
Yeah, like it was a proper salami log, wasn't
that's it? That's
it,
yeah.
What was funny about that, though, someone said, oh, well, could it even cut through Valve? Yes, it cut through that. Unless he's rocking an elephant's trunk, it is going through you. It is 100% going through you.
I like
you.
That it's questioned,
though. Like, oh, could he? Yes. Yeah, it could go through my leg, let alone my dick. Jesus Christ.
Oh,
but we do see some Val Venus, so...
Yeah, we do.
Well, we get the music.
Oh, yeah.
And we're nearly at the music, to be fair. As we know, Holly, we've done that. And, no, we've done that. Apparently, Val likes playing with fire, though. With Kai and Tai now in the ring, Val's music hits and he appears at the entryway with Mrs. Yamaguchi. And the two begin hugging and swaying like it's a slow song.
It's so awkward.
It's just
so awkward.
Yeah. Also, he must have been like, don't get excited, don't get excited. Because there's a lot of physical contact. So yeah, I reckon you can control it.
Right.
But when physical contact, sometimes things kick off without...
Yeah.
From a guy's perspective, sure, okay. I can confirm that that is...
I wouldn't often know.
Well, no, I might. Well, okay, I'm not going to go into the anatomy of it. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for helping, by the way. That was really kind of you.
Come on. You think I can get there?
I was going to say, did you know what word I was going for?
My brain was like, I think I know, but I'm not going to say it in case it's the wrong word.
Yeah.
Make myself sound stupid.
Yeah, so I'm not going into the anatomy side of it, but I'm assuming that obviously just the female signs aren't noticeably visible, but it would still, I assume it would still work in the same kind of way, except on a guy you would notice it unless it was really excited from a female perspective. Like when Baron Corbin's coming out or something. Oh, he's leaving. That's what it had to get referenced, didn't it? To be fair, absolutely had to get referenced. Holly, just when you think jorts were no longer in fashion, here are Kai and Tai, who, to a man, are all wearing them and hoodies for this match.
Yeah.
They're like wearing my childhood. It's basically what they're doing.
Jorts and a jumper.
My grunge phase, yeah, absolutely.
Where's the chain that goes from one?
I never really did the chain thing. Never,
no?
Yeah, I think I had one, but I never really kicked, because I thought, no, me, I'll just get my get caught on something and fall over, and then it's a situation.
Yeah.
Starting off at the bell is Mosh and Funaki, who lock up before Mosh locks on a side headlock. Push off by Funaki, who gets shoulder tackled to the canvas. Drop down and leapfrog by Funaki, comically sees his hood go up onto his head upon landing. Now it's Mosh's turn to leapfrog and go for a drop down. Holly's impressed.
I am.
Big back. I'm pretty sure I could leapfrog Funaki if I'm being honest, but...
I always find a leapfrog impressive.
Yeah,
no matter who really does it,
yeah.
I'm just impressed.
Big back body drop to Funaki. Deep arm drag, and Mosh is kicking away at Funaki's midsection before tagging in Droz, who leaps over the back of Mosh to connect groin first on Funaki's back over the ropes. The bump and grind is still going on at the entrance, but Droz can only get two in the ring. Eye rake by Funaki gives him enough gives him enough space to tag in Dick Togo, who gets turned inside out by a clothesline from Droz. Holly obviously didn't know the name of Dick Togo because she's laughed. No? So you have no idea who Dick Togo is here? Obviously a Japanese wrestler, done the vast majority of his work in Japan.
Right,
works for
okay.
companies like New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think he's done Michinoku Pro, other companies. So yeah, we'll get on to the third gentleman in a second, because his name, honestly, it's the most confusing name for me. But we'll get there. We'll get there. Right hand sends Togo into the buckles and a strong whip. What did you call them?
So sorry. I made you on there.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt the yawn. It looked
so
quite therapeutic.
Sorry. It was a really good one.
Yeah,
as well.
And I can tell you're getting emotional. Yeah.
It was a really good one.
Like caught in the act. What did you name the Kai and Tai lads in this match?
I didn't.
You didn't just call them Kai and Tai?
No.
Oh my God, what did you put?
Nothing. I don't know who they are. I know when they're in the ring because I've put that there's moves, but if I haven't written who it is, then I know it's not Gozo or a headbanger.
Okay, so it's not Japanese man one, Japanese man two. Funaki,
no.
You know.
Yes.
Okay.
But I just, also, there's no way in hell my phone is going to let me write that.
No, that's fair. That is fair. I mean, we can't even get Saturn and Malenko in your phone, so yeah, that's fair enough. Right hand sends Togo into the buckles and a strong whip. Buckles hot. He does get the boot up on a following charge, allowing him to tag in Men's Teo. And that is spelt M-E-N, apostrophe S, so belonging to men. T-E-I-O-H. That's a bastard to spell repeatedly when you're doing... So Men's Teo.
Okay.
And the duo connects with a double bulldog to the former Denver Bronco. Hook of the leg by Teo is sent flying when Droz kicks out at two. Like fucking flying as well.
Mm-hmm.
Teo looks for the body slam, but it's easily blocked, and Droz hits one of his own as we head to commercial break. When we return, we see Togo connect with a running leg drop on Thrasher that only gets a one count. Togo claws away at the face of Thrasher whilst burying his knee into the spine until the ref breaks it up. We're told by JR that King was asked by the nice man from HR to head backstage and call it an early night, as apparently he's an uncontrollable animal around women, it seems. Thrasher, and by the way, apart from the last part, word for word what JR says.
Yeah, it is.
Thrasher gets sent into the buckles but avoids the Dick Togo charge, and the Kai and Tai member lands on their neck in the corner in a heap.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Holly would have flinched when she saw that. Self-inflicted as well, mad.
Yep.
Funaki takes a couple of cheap shots on Thrasher, allowing Togo to make the tag to Teo, and he connects with a big boot to the midsection. Funaki now legal, and he hits a scoop slam on Thrasher before heading to the top rope, where he misses with an elbow drop. Droz is tagged in, as is Teo, but Droz has clotheslines for everyone, basically, at this point.
Yeah.
Now Teo and Togo eat body slams, and all six men are in the ring. In unison, the New Jersey trio whip Kai and Tai into the middle of the ring, where they all collide. I like that.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was quite funny.
Leaving only Teo and Droz in the squared circle. Body slam on Teo, and Droz signals the end is near before delivering a sit-out powerbomb and securing the 1-2-3. Holly, what do you think of this six-man tag?
Gave it one.
Interesting.
It was very here nor there for me.
Interesting. Yeah. Why?
I just didn't care. I had no engagement in this whatsoever.
We've flipped reversal.
Ooh,
on this one.
Oh, you're giving this one
high? 2.5.
Okay, fair enough.
Because I thought the action in this was miles better than the opening match. I actually know the members of Kai and Tai, which, if we're being honest, is a big reason that it held you back on this. Maybe if you'd seen them a few times, you'd have felt differently.
Yeah, probably.
Funaki being the only one that you'd have known of the group. So I expected you to...
continue
with your W formation. So I was unsurprised by that, but I think if I'm just looking at the action, I thought it was perfectly decent. 2.5, and I wasn't expecting to give it that, if I'm honest. After the match is done, Mr. Yamaguchi tried desperately to make it to break up the pin, but trips over the bottom rope and pounds away at the mat in frustration. I actually thought that looked pretty good as well. It looked like he legitimately went over. With the match now over, Val sends Mrs. Yamaguchi backstage and slowly saunters his way to the ring, licking the tip of his thumb every four fucking steps. He challenges Mr. Yamaguchi to make a move for him, but he and Kai and Tai head back up the entryway instead. Now Val has laid his eyes on the celebrity guest sitting at ringside, and as he approaches, Mario Lopez stands up to shake his hand. Val swats it aside and begins gyrating towards Amy Hunter Cornelius because the man cannot be stopped. I don't know what I've put here.
Oh, go on, word for word.
Mario is what you should say, but I've got Amrio. Amrio. Mario laughs and puts his arm in front of Amy before saying to Val to not go there and asks him to leave. The big Valboski is uninterested in the beta cuck behaviour and delivers a monstrous pie face before beckoning Amy to come forth. Mario has had enough and jumps the guardrail to hit a double leg on Val and immediately is swarmed upon by referees and officials. Mm-hmm. Fair play to Mario. Yep. He played the part very, very well.
So well.
Potentially the star performer of the night for me.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong.
Really thought he did it well.
I don't think you're wrong.
His reactions look like, oh, hi, I'm at wrestling, kind of. Yes. Oh, okay. And then it's like, don't do that.
That's enough.
Okay. And then it looked like he was genuinely emotionally involved the whole time. I thought it was good. It's a good job that as Slater, he did all that amateur wrestling at, what was it, Valley High or whatever it was called? From Saved by the Bell. Yeah. So that came in handy for the double leg takedown.
I also would like to know, he has not aged a day.
I know, so upsetting, isn't it?
He still looks so good now.
Yeah, he's a good looking lad. It's annoying. He must be, near 50, if not.
I'd assume so.
Yeah, I don't know. Where do we go from here? Okay.
Oh, God.
Amy looks absolutely shocked at what unfolded there. The cameras now take us backstage, where we see D'Lo Brown beside Mark Henry as the European champion is shining his belt in preparation for his defence later tonight. When we return from commercials, we are shown some highlights from Fully Loaded, where apparently there is a breathtaking bikini battle royal, direct quote. Sable undresses behind a partition and excites King before the footage takes us to snippets of what Jacqueline wasn't wearing in the ring.
Jesus Christ, honestly. Sweet Jesus.
We also see Sable and an infamous clip, which I will save the details on for now. A show for another day, perhaps. And that was Fully Loaded 98. Coming to a podcast near you soon.
Yeah, but I remember this.
As really?
That the boobs on the boobs on the hands on the boob thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that. When I think of Sable, that's literally what I think of.
Yeah, as does pretty much most red-blooded males. As well. I imagine pretty much most people remember her for that, to be honest. We're also shown footage of what took place on Raw thereafter, and Vince creeping on Sable, saying that when someone like her owes him a debt, he usually collects. Having seen the Vince McMahon documentary and knowing, obviously, that Sable sued the company for sexual inappropriate behaviour and stuff like this, I wonder if this was used as key point one. But it wasn't Vince. It was the Mr. McMahon character.
Of course. Of course.
Funny, that.
Such a fucking sleaze.
Mm-hmm. He says she can keep her job as long as she isn't, and I quote, an ungrateful bitch.
Gosh.
How would you feel?
My work review isn't going to start with that line. You can keep your job if you're not an ungrateful
I'll give you
bitch.
A job. Sable, I think I'd get sacked, actually. Sable flips.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. Just depends if you went to HR, to be honest. Which I imagine you would. Sable flips McMahon the double birds and removes her top to reveal a black and white bikini. That's pretty much the gist of this one.
She looks insane, though, but yeah.
Yeah, but a bit xylophone-y.
Xylophone? Oh, ribs.
Yeah, when I can see...
Bit too skinny.
Yeah, I just think I'm just too fat for that kind of woman, to be honest. Match number 3, D'Lo Brown with Mark Henry versus Ken Shamrock for the WWF European title. Holly is foaming at the mouth, and not the one you think. As we return back... What? As we return back to Sunday Night Heat, we see WWF European champion D'Lo Brown bobblehead his way down to the ring, ready to defend his title.
He reminds me so much of a Duracell bunny. That every time you see him, he's always so full of energy.
He is. He's like got an oscillation to him. Yeah, that's fair. His challenger, the world's most dangerous man, and one of Holly's visual stimulants, Ken Shamrock. Ken is wearing little red budgie smugglers and is in peak form. Mm. He psychs himself up on the steel stairs before entering the ring and only just avoids the onrushing D'Lo Brown before putting the champion down with a back elbow. Holly, tell me your thoughts on the leader of the Lion's Den, the head of the pack, Ken Shamrock.
I can't with this guy. Those are such small pants. They're so small.
And yet you don't really see anything as well.
He looks good.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's lots of vitamins.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you pause?
No. Oh, okay. No, don't need to. It's etched in my mind.
Okay. Okay. D'Lo whips... what else? No, we'll cover that later. D'Lo whips Ken into the ropes and looks for a drop kick, but Shamrock holds on and the champ hits the canvas hard. whipped by Shamrock, and we see a Japanese arm drag before a second whip results in a stiff kick to the chest, knocking the champ down once more. Well, actually, did you think this was going to be a good match or an interesting match?
I did, actually.
Yeah, I thought you might.
Yeah.
D'Lo holds on as Shamrock tries to move him away from the ropes, and on the second try, Ken finds himself backdropped over the top to the floor. D'Lo is signalling to the ref that he has hurt his knee, and this distraction allows Mark Henry to clothesline Shamrock on the outside before tossing him back into the ring. Tossing him made you laugh there, didn't it?
No, I know what's coming next.
Okay. Shamrock won't be stirred as he throws a few punches at D'Lo, and in turn... Oh, and it turns out he's not alone, as Steve Blackman and Dan Seven, make their way to ringside. Holly, there's a lot of man here for you, isn't there?
There's a lot of man.
Yeah. There's a bit later on, I was like, she was pausing like mad for this. 100%. Oh. Spinning back heel kick by Brown, and he follows with a few big right hands and a body slam. On the second rope, D'Lo connects with a forearm drop and makes the cover for a two count. JR suggests he should have gone for the lowdown as the chest protector deals out additional damage. Fair point. Mm. He might not have elected for the lowdown, but the chops he is selling at the Butcher's are indeed sky high. Mm-hmm. Corner whip is reversed and D'Lo hits... Hits instead.
Ooh.
Okay, corner whip is reversed and D'Lo hits instead before he walks right into a belly-to-belly suplex. Somehow, despite him being right in position to, Ken doesn't make the cover.
Yeah.
The ref begins the count briefly as both men are down until they return to their feet and exchange right hands. Reversal on the whip and Shamrock connects with a Hurricane Runner that sends the champ to the outside. D'Lo takes a long look at Seven before shoving him in the chest and returning to the ring. Enraged, Seven quickly follows and tackles the champ from behind, beginning to maul him. Before we get to the end of this, do you know who Dan Seven is?
Thank you. I've got a question that says, who is this guy?
So Dan Seven, a professional wrestler, so he's a very good amateur wrestler as well, competed in mixed martial arts until he was very old, like very old, well into his 40s, maybe even got near 50 and was doing it. He was NWA champion for a long time in the period where the NWA was a bit dead. So going into the formation of TNA, so in the 90s, so around this time when he came into WWE, he was the NWA champion. In the UFC, he competed in the early events. He won a UFC tournament. He had I'm trying to find a tactful way to say this, potentially the shittest fight I've ever seen in my life against Ken Shamrock in the UFC.
Really?
Yep. That went on for... Oh my god, it felt like an eternity. It might have been half an hour where they just laid on top of each other, basically.
Oh,
Dan,
really?
Dan would tackle Ken to the floor and just smother him, and that was it. It was boring. Really, really bad fight. And I think it was declared a draw because nothing of any note happened, really. So those two have a history, and it looks here like they're trying to set up some kind of mixed martial arts stable, because Steve Blackman's got the background as well, karate, etc. So interesting, and then obviously Ken's having to work with Dan Seven quite closely. Blackman jumps in and breaks the two up, suggesting that was a dumb decision and not part of the plan as the referee signals for the bell and D'Lo has retained by disqualification. Thought that might be the case, but you like D'Lo, so it's fine.
I do, yeah.
Shamrock is incensed, asking what happened, and Steve has to step between the two men. This is when Holly gets happy. It's two slabs of beef just bouncing off each other.
Yeah.
All the tendons, tension, Seeing these two next to each other in the ring, I know Holly is happy, is what I've written here. A stern face Seven leaves in the ring, leaves the ring and heads backstage as Shamrock begins smashing the steel stairs with a chair as he loses his mind.
Mm.
What do you think about this match? What did you score it?
I was disappointed, obviously. It was very short. I would like it to have been a lot longer. A lot longer. Joking. Just a bit longer would have done.
Just a bit of Steve Blackman and Ken Shamrock having a conversation.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Actually, just don't even have to do anything. Just stand and chat.
Talk about two extremes as well. So Dan Seven came out in a suit. Steve Blackman came out in the Chris Benoit.
Where's his clothes?
No. Hey.
It's like he was midway through getting changed. I reckon, I've got to go out.
He did it like an anime thing where he's like side on, then just goes and takes off his whole top like that and then goes, I'm ready to go. Comes out without the bouffant hair doing
so
all that.
So funny. I gave it 0.5.
Oh, wow. I gave it 1 star and I thought I was being pretty harsh on it.
Yeah, I just couldn't. And I think the half a point is for Shamrock's pants, I'll be honest.
And, well, maybe a quarter star for that and a quarter star for Steve Blackman coming out.
Yeah, I mean, also, he needs to, whoever he was getting his tans from, He needs a refund because he lifts his arms at one point and there's just a white streak all down the side. So.
Before we head to another commercial break, Paul Bearer declares that the road to destruction begins tonight. It doesn't matter if it's The Rock, Owen Hart, Undertaker or Stone Cold, Kane and Mankind will take back what is theirs. With this, Bearer, Kane and Mankind walk off screen. When we return, we see Bart Gunn relaxing on a leather sofa with a WWF Attitude shirt on, being interviewed by Shanna Mokler, or Mokler.
Mokler. Mokler. She's the future. She then marries Travis Barker. Just
FYI. Oh, okay. Shanna. The way it's... I swear, because I wrote down... I paused it when it was on screen. It says Shanna Mokler.
It's, I think it's...
M-O-A-K-L-E-R. Oh, I might have missed the L, to be fair. From...
I vaguely remember.
Fair enough. From Pacific Blue. You didn't realise that was Bart Gunn, did you?
No, you saw my face, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Because I've written Lefty. Who the fuck's this?
Bart Gunn.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, because he's even talking about, and it shows footage of the Brawl for All.
I think it's, I just zone out in these segments because they're so pointless.
Fair.
I just don't take it in.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, leave that. Shanna asks Bart about the Brawl for All and how physical he was with Dr. Death. Bart responds saying he has all the respect in the world for Dr. Death, but at the end of the day, he caught him with a big left hand. Shanna asks to see some of his moves and closes the gap between the two of them. Bart says, sure, and puts his arm around her. All this leads up to her informing us that Pacific Blue is up next.
Mm.
Give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Dearie me. Lopez and the other one,
it
fine.
It feels like bargain bucket. Like
it does bargain bucket.
Yeah.
I'd rather have had a bargain bucket, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Before the main event of the evening gets underway, we once again see Stone Cold sitting in the locker room drinking a cold one. Maybe the same footage.
As I hope so, because if he's sat there this whole time, just bored out of his mind, just drinking.
As he has a vested interest in the outcome of the following match, because not only is he the WWF champion, he's also the tag team champion with The Undertaker at this point. And now, Holly, it's main event time of the evening.
It's main event time.
I guess it's main event time. Kane and Mankind with Paul Bearer versus The Rock and Owen Hart.
Yeah.
You didn't have high expectations for this one, I assume?
Not really.
Okay.
But which, again, to me also weirdly is surprising considering the names that are in it. But having seen what I'd seen...
Fair.
I had a low expectation.
Fair. The former tag team champions Kane and Mankind make their way to the ring where the 7-footer sets off his corner pyro, making the woman, or the women I should say, with Shane audibly react... The Nation now make their way to the ring and we are treated to loud Rocky Sucks chants.
Yeah.
Owen keeps putting a finger to his lips, calmly asking the crowd to be quiet. I like that. I don't know why it amused me. We also see a person in the crowd who decided in the summer to fully cosplay as Kane, which is mental for many reasons. The bell sounds and it's Owen and Mankind that start things off with a lockup. Owen quickly turns it into a top wrist lock that gets countered into one from Mankind. Mankind talks the arm over his shoulder as Owen claws for the eyes of the masked man with little success. I actually don't know who the faces are here either.
No, don't know.
Lovely. Ooh, oh dear, I wrote that like
lovely.
Mark.
Lovely.
Lovely rolling and flipping escape by Owen, who reapplies the hold himself, but Mankind breaks free with a couple of right hands. Mankind ducks too early off a whip and eats a kick, but levels Owen with a clothesline when he returns. Elbow drop misses and Owen tags in the Intercontinental Champion. Kicked to the gut by The Rock and a couple of right hands puts him in control. Face first in the buckles goes Mankind, but he successfully claws the eyes of the champ before running him face first into his own corner and tagging in Kane.
Boring.
Kane looked in peak form, I thought, here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, just one massive fucking pasty arm.
Maybe that's the trick here. Maybe everyone else is like forgetting to put their tops on and all this sort of stuff. And he's like, no, I'm going to cover up a lot, but just expose one arm.
Yeah.
Dangle the carrot.
That's all you need.
Little... Man of mystery.
Yeah, there
yeah,
you go.
Maybe. Yeah.
Man of mystery. Interesting.
International man of mystery.
Yeah, well, that would have been a very different gimmick for Kane. Oh my God, could you imagine Kane as Austin Powers? Oh dear. Rock eats another buckle and takes some punishment in the corner, including a blatant choke. Corner whip sees Rock stagger back out into a clothesline and he eats a fist drop upon hitting the canvas. Deliberate uppercut by Kane, but Rock just about manages to hit a float over DDT as the crowd chant Nugget at Owen, who is standing on the apron covering his ears. Two count for The Rock.
Why?
It was like he was like a little nugget, so he's not important. Just this derogatory term used specifically at Owen Hart.
Oh.
So you go, I'm not a nugget.
Okay, fair enough.
which is exactly, by the way, what a nugget would say. Just putting that out there. Yeah. The champ clotheslines Kane over the ropes to the floor where he lands on his feet. The girls say, "Oh no," in the most illegitimate way you could convey concern.
Yep.
Kane strides back up to the apron where he pulls Rock down throat first over the top rope, and now he has climbed to the top rope where he connects with a clothesline. Sadly, we have taken a commercial break, and when we return, Owen is kicking away a prone Mankind in his team's corner as Kane is being instructed to head to the apron. Rock gets the tag and kicks away on the Masked Man before choking him over the top rope and slinging him to the canvas. Into the corner goes Mankind, where Rock looks to fire away, but Mankind tries to fight back and nearly succeeds. Rock does manage, however, to drag Mankind to his corner and make the tag to Owen, who misses by a mile on a spinning back heel kick, because Mankind, I think, ducked the wrong way.
Yeah.
Double arm DDT by Mankind connects, and both men are down. Tag to Kane, who wastes little time on clubbing away at Owen. Corner whip and a double-handed race choke by the big man, who tosses him down to the canvas. Whip and big boot puts Owen down once more, but the clothesline is ducked. Kane now grasps Owen by the neck, but the wily veteran kicks away at the legs and connects with an enziguri that drops Kane down to one knee. Up top, Owen connects with a missile dropkick, but Kane kicks out at two, and now it's time for Owen to get that choke slam. Heavy landing there.
Mm-hmm.
Kane goes for the tombstone, but Rock enters the ring and clubs him, causing him to drop Owen to the canvas. Mankind takes the opportunity to drag Owen to the outside and begins unloading with stiff rights. Kane joins in on the fun, but Rock is out there quickly to brawl with Kane. All four men continue to brawl, but Owen slides in the last second to beat the count, and the nation wins by count out. Smart play by the veteran. Holly, what did you think of the match, and would you score it, please?
1.25. I did not enjoy it. Again, it's a show this short, and we've had one DQ and now one count out.
Yep.
And
one interference finish.
Yeah, I just...
And one clean finish, to be fair.
Yeah, just... It just didn't...
The only clean finish came in the six-man tag, and Val Venus was out there the whole time.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know, and I think I personally had a high expectation considering who was in the match, but then I think I have to be logical and go, it's on heat. Like, it's not going to be that amazing.
I'll be honest, I didn't have a high expectation because of the circumstances that you just kind of explained there.
Yeah.
I was very similar to you. Actually, this is the closest by far that we've come to on a match. I gave it 1.5, so we're only a quarter of a star different.
Nice.
It wasn't great, but I wasn't expecting it to be as well.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting that the nation kind of came out with a win there because...
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it, I don't think.
No.
With the main event now over... JR sends us backstage where Michael Cole is in the locker room with the WWF champ, Stone Cold, Steve Austin. Cole references that Steve now knows who's going to face on Monday, but wants to ask him about throwing The Undertaker a beer and whether that shows solidarity between the two. Stone Cold says, "Ah, hell, it just shows him that he was thirsty and I gave him a drink." That was pretty much...
Fair enough.
Cole's second question... is that after the beer, Taker looked to have conveniently turned his back as Kane attacked Austin from behind. Although Kane actually slipped on the beer as he did this, which amused me.
It was quite funny.
Stone Cold says it was his fault for dropping his guard, but at the same time he did notice that Undertaker didn't lift a damn finger to help out either. Cole asks Stone Cold if they are no closer than they were 3 weeks ago, and Austin informs Michael that he's a lot smarter than he gave him credit for, but does also call him a jackass. Stone Cold has all the respect for The Rock and Owen Hart, but it doesn't matter as he will whip everybody's ass that is put in front of him. He ends the interview there, saying Cole is beginning to piss him off and he just walks off camera. To send us home, JR and Shane say that it has been fun and they will see us next week as the show comes to a close.
Yes.
What were your overall feelings on the show?
The fact that it was 45 minutes...
Lovely.
...was great. Because I couldn't be annoyed about anything really length of time-wise.
Yep, fair.
Wait
till the next one.
My notes literally have said it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen, by far. Considering it's 45 minutes, wasn't too bad, wasn't also that good.
Fair.
I gave it a 4.5 out of 10.
I think I agree with you, actually.
Yeah.
I was leaning towards 4, but... looking at it in hindsight, I think 4.5 is probably about a fair summarisation of it. it was helped massively by having some of the bigger names on the show. Yes. Imagine if you take out all those players and introduce more, less, not being funny, Al Snow, like that kind of level of...
I'll be honest, I quite like Al.
Yeah, I like Al Snow, but it's not the headline act. You'd feel like, I didn't feel like I got a main event kind of thing.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying.
And that might be unfair, but that's how it would have felt as the fan.
It'd be interesting to then watch a different one now. But do you know what I mean? Like, watch a later one.
Yeah.
Once it's all set in stone and changed, and it be like those sorts of people the whole way through, and see
what
kind of vibe it gives off.
Anything from 2002 onwards, I think, would kind of have you covered on that one, if I'm being honest. Yeah. So I'm sure we can do that at some point. Mm. Someone can point us there, to be fair. But we're not quite done.
No.
Outfit of the night, Holly.
Oh God, this was a fucking struggle.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay.
Because there's not a lot to choose from here.
Okay, so do you want to give it to Ken Shamrock now?
Four. There are four contenders.
Ken Shamrock.
He's in there, yeah.
Funny.
Of course it is.
Steve Blackman won't be in there, though.
No.
Not Jeff Jarrett. Edge might have been considered, but I don't think so. Are we accounting for Sable and Jackie, even though they weren't on the show? No. Okay, fine. Who else... Kane, I thought, looked in good form, to be fair. So yep. I'd put Kane on there. And Stone Cold, really, you didn't see a great deal of him backstage. No. Jeff Jarrett, definitely not. Tennessee Lee, definitely not.
I did actually put Double J in there.
Did you?
Purely
okay.
Because it was slim fucking pickings.
Fine.
It's just all over.
So who have I missed then?
Owen Hart. I liked his singlet.
Oh, okay.
The black with
I know
the,
you're not a singlet fan, so I didn't
know,
go for that.
But I like the black with the yellow danger stuff on it. So yeah, I've put all over silver of JJ. I've even put, it pains me to even put that on here, but I feel like it's going to be a slim pickings.
Yeah, yeah.
There isn't much to it, but the tiny red pants, the kick pads, it just works. Looks good. Kane, the red, the black. Brilliant. Slim pickings though. And then Owen Hart, the singlet with the danger yellow bits.
Which makes me think you're now going to say Owen Hart, but I'm sticking with Ken Shamrock because that's where my brain went for you.
Nah, Kane.
I would agree. To me, Kane was the best one of the
night. I felt like I couldn't put Ken Shamrock.
Why not?
Because that's not really his outfit, is it? It's just a pair of pants and kick pads.
But that is his outfit.
But do you know what I mean? It's no. So yeah,
fine.
Ken.
I would have been happily accepting of Ken Shamrock.
Yeah.
Because it, to be fair, looked good on
as
him.
As would I.
So... What now?
Not,
let's get there.
Now.
Let's get a look.
Not now.
But before we put this one to bed,
yeah.
Can you please share the? And I'm not going to accept no. Please, please, can you share the socials with the lovely listeners?
WinTwicePod@gmail.com. Every other form of social media is WinTwicePod. Instagram, YouTube, X.
Oh yeah, I haven't posted on that for a while. To be fair,
oh,
but yes.
Dear.
So, I mean, we're not exactly throwing them out on Instagram either, to be fair.
But yeah, that's it.
And yeah, you can contact, I mean, if you, you know, want to put a show suggestion forward, please do so. You can either do it via email, which is what I'm picking up on.
Yeah.
If you want to send it to Holly for whatever reason, do it through Instagram. So I know she likes interacting with you fine folks out there. But that pretty much puts this one in the rearview mirror. I think we've analyse the show to an extent I wasn't expecting us to, if I'm being quite honest. We've gone about 20 minutes over what I thought we would. But obviously meant that there was a lot of fun and shenanigans to be discussed.
Yeah, a lot of tit talk.
A lot of titillation.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, as you'd say. But yeah, hopefully you've all enjoyed the show. And until then, take care, guys.
Bye.
Until next time, this has been a Win Twice Wrestling production. Peace out.